October 16th meeting in the Portland City Council. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Hales?
Here. Okay, let's start with communications items, please.
Item 970, request of Colonel Moses to address council regarding City Hall Plaza history, vigil removal, and submission of prayer requests. He called, is not able to make it.
Okay.
971, request of Joseph Gordon Tequila to address council regarding houseless issues.
Morning.
Well, hello. My name is Joseph Gordon. Most people call me Tequila. When I signed up about 2 months ago, some things was basically not happening. That's what I will say is happening now. So what I'm saying is, even though I believe it caused a big chaos in the air, I would say, to me, disturbing the comfortable is doing, as an activist, I will say, disturbing the comforts of others in certain degrees is doing a job, you know. So I would say, what I got to say is, if keep doing what you're doing, and that's is talking, communicating with the homeless directly about the homeless issues, and doing what you do, I'm saying that you're on the right path of not solving the problem, but helping the solutions what's been in Portland's history. That's what I got to say. But what I had to say before, I can't say now because I believe y'all are in the process of actually doing something, especially. So what I want to speak about is more, as of right now, is about the drug, the Russian drug, Crocodile, if anyone knows about this. It's been in Russia for 10 years now. Basically, it's homemade heroin, and it rots your flesh off within, 2 years. It made it to shores of America. People can just process it. It's made of gasoline, lighter fluid, codeine. It's a bunch of garbage, basically, and it rots your flesh off. And I believe that the city should put some advocacy to this about warning people about it. It already is in 3 states. It's been identified suspectedly in 3 states. And before we start seeing people like zombies walking around, at least if people do it, have them educated about what this stuff is, because you get it for, it's 10% of the cost of heroin, and it's a heroin substitute, and I believe it's very important before it hits the streets of Portland, because walking around and watching live zombies, I think it's very important to get it educated. And if you decide, what I had to say before was, if we don't educate people about it, then it will be genocide. If we educate people and they still end up doing it, it'd be suicide, which is completely two different things in my opinion. So I believe if y'all can study Crocodile, please, and have a city alert about this drug that's now in America. All right, thank you.
Tequila, does it have a street name?
Yes, Crocodile. Crocodile or Crocodile, which is, it's because the skin where you injected it, and no, I don't know your hair, but the skin where you injected it, it becomes green and scaly like a crocodile, and it starts, that's why they got the name in Russia, because your skin starts becoming crocodilian-like, and it starts, your flesh literally falls off to the bone. Yeah. So.
Thank you for letting us know. That's appalling. Thanks.
No problem.
Thank you. Okay. Next person, please.
972, a request of Katie Braun to address council regarding independent police review.
Morning.
My name is Kenetta Braun, and I appreciate your time this morning. This is my friend Kelly. I called 911. Police came. My ex-boyfriend went through my dog door. Right now you're being handed a copy of the police report where he says in the police report that my ex-boyfriend went through the dog door. Because he had installed it, and it's my home that I live in alone, he knew he could get through that dog door. And when he admitted to the police that he came through my dog door where I lived alone and that he had previously installed, the police did nothing. So the front page is the independent police review complaint form where I complained. Now let me get your attention really fast. This is Kelly Caldwell, my best friend. When I went to the district attorney to tell the district attorney I wanted to press felony charges for an ex-boyfriend coming through my dog door, admitting it in a police report, and the police doing absolutely nothing, the independent police review 2 weeks later, when I called them on the phone, accused me of impersonating Kelly Caldwell because we both had a big smile, bright blue eyes, and curly blonde hair. I had never been to the independent police review office before. Kelly went in my name when I was talking to the district attorney and the civilian judge that gave my ex-boyfriend a restraining order. That independent police...
While she was at the courthouse, I went over to make a complaint.
That independent police review person was an ex-sergeant with the police department. He has now quit. I'm not sure the circumstances of his quitting, but I can tell you that I talked to the director of the independent police review many times about us being accused of impersonating each other. It is not fair that women are treated the way they are with the independent police review or the police department. Now, setting aside what the independent police review did, because they now have a new director, and just FYI, they have new 5 employees within this time frame of 8 months. 5 new employees at the independent police review. I say, sign me up to be a citizen on the independent police review committee. I show up for the independent police review committee screening. They canceled the meeting. There was no screening on that day. I had emails saying, show up at this time and this day for the independent police review. Irene, the community coordinator, was out of town, not even there. Another city person that was supposed to be holding interviews for the independent police review, not even open. I have 29 more seconds. Let me just tell you about our police department. The officer that would not arrest the guy that came through my dog door and admitted it in the police report that you have a copy of called me hysterical. He was also fired in Chicago. He was also demoted. He has also had problems in Portland, and he's made our newspaper for being a bad cop, one of 5 bad cops that makes me not sleep at night. I volunteer for the police department, and I will not stand up as a citizen for cops that do not get any punishment at all. I live three blocks from the independent police review. All that sergeant had to do was tell me there's a women's shelter 3 blocks from my house. He said nothing, and he is a sergeant. I left with no help from the police, nor do I have confidence that if I ever call 911, I will get help from them or the independent police review.
Well, thanks for being here this morning. I hope while you're here, you'll stop by my office. I don't think Chad is in the room, but...
We've spoken to Chad before.
Okay,
yeah.
Stop by and talk with Chad, particularly about what's happening now at IPR. So thank you. Thanks. I appreciate you coming.
Item 973. Well,
you're on here. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Kelly.
I'm actually here for something totally different, although I really do want to say that I concur that the independent police review office accused me of being her. I even got prank called by the cops. They called me. I asked them to identify themselves, and they hung up on me. That's my experience with this story, just so you know. But I'm here to talk about homelessness, actually. And you might remember me from the Solidarity Cupcakes and Housing, and I really need you all to step up if you're going to get any more cupcakes, because it's not cutting it. The cops, in particular, are a huge problem with the unhoused. And so I think the first thing that we need to do is we need to end the camping ban. What does that mean? That means that when a person is sleeping, Tequila said it was your job to dislodge the comfortable or the
disturb
the comfort of people. Yeah, well, that's happening. So people are getting their blankets and sleeping bags taken away and either arrested or just left there to lay on the ground without their sleeping bag by the Portland police. It's not acceptable. It needs to stop. I see it happen all the time. I'm the person who brings them a new sleeping bag. That needs to stop. I got other things to do more important than that. Which it comes to my second topic. We need to open the women's shelter now. Not on November 1st, not push back a week because we don't have enough money, but like next week. Yesterday I stood outside New Seasons. I spoke with a woman who had a 7-year-old child with her. I asked her where she was going to sleep. She was trying to collect money so that she doesn't have to sleep on the sidewalk with her daughter. Or, by the way, the cops might come and take your sleeping bag away while you're sleeping on the sidewalk. It happens in the city, and it shouldn't. This needs to be the city that works and not the city that works people over. And I was just at your lovely thing. I got a bag of swag. It's awesome. We totally need to collaborate to do better for all the people in this community, including the unhoused. It's not that hard. We're making it harder than it is. We're harassing people and criminalizing people for being unhoused instead of lending them a hand. And I got more examples than I got time for today. I got guys who got busted pissing in the park in the shrubbery and now are listed as sexual predators and can't get housing. This is real people. I could point to these people. I got a woman who was told, her social worker at Aging and Disability Services told me that she shouldn't go to the shelter because she's too fragile. And when she had no more couch to sleep on and she ended up on the street, Project Respond picked her up. They took her to OHSU. And you know what happened at OHSU? She got arrested for trespassing and went to jail. She wasn't even homeless for 72 hours before she now has a criminal record. Another woman, she was living on a boathouse over by the Columbia River crossing. You think they might want to evict her because there's a lot of money to be made with that bridge and they need the space for the equipment. Seriously. Plus her boathouse, I talked to the city, business, if they didn't evict her, they would have been responsible for fixing the property up. So they evicted her. I talked to the guy at the city. I talked to the building guy. He told me that there was a memo in the works to say that this unit is not habitable. So she got evicted. And then you know what happened? She tried to break back in because she needed her stuff. And she got arrested for breaking back into her own house. And then
Time, so you need to finish up.
I will. Then she went over to the house where she's on the title with her husband. She's on the title. And there she got another assignment. She got arrested for trespassing again, and she had to go to family court. We're criminalizing the homeless.
Kelly, thank you.
Item 974, request of Sharon Nassett to address council regarding West County toll-free bridge resolution.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor and council members. Thank you very much for letting me speak. For the record, my name is Sharon Nassett. Ms. Carla will be handing out to you a resolution, and it's called the West County Toll-Free Bridge. It is from Clark County, Washington. And Clark County, Washington has five transportation issues, but has two bridges on their November ballot in a couple of weeks. One is, should we have a bridge on the west side that is toll-free for $900 million? Or should we have one on the east side? And the reason I'm bringing this to your attention for a couple of reasons is they have realized the Columbia River Crossing Project is not going forward, nor should it go forward as it is. You may remember as the recent elections, anybody who said build it or supported CRC or did not make it through the election. Only people that knew there were problems with the Columbia River crossing. Right now, it is important for this body, in the most respectful manner, you do not have the luxury to sit back and remain silent. The Columbia River crossing project has many problems with it and should not go forward. Having a supplemental environmental impact statement is common after a record of decision. You get there and you say, we don't like this one, we have to choose something else. Right now, Oregon is considering this go it alone and they're having their kickoff next week. You need to talk with the senators and representatives that represent Portland and say, the Columbia River Crossing project not only was really expensive, did not solve what it said it would do, and violated open meeting laws and other problems and process problems. If it is meant to be, it can rise to the top through an honest and fair NEPA process. So right now, your council needs to say the Columbia River Crossing has too many projects for Portland to go forward with. And you know that's what your constituents say. And just saying that will change the legislation and open it up because many of them don't want it. I've been down to Salem. You probably know, 70 of them or so. And They don't want it either, but they're being brutalized and they're hearing nothing from you. You do not have the luxury to be silent. Even just saying, thank you, Clark County Commissioners, for putting an advisory vote on the ballot that we need additional bridges. We need to move the conversation forward. We have a problem, and the Columbia River Crossing isn't what people want. And start a supplemental environmental impact statement. I can give you a nice little, since being involved in 2000, I can give you a nice little list of what was missed and what an easy baseline for a supplement could be like. So thank you again, and I really hope to hear your voices very soon.
Thanks. Thank you for coming. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, let's move to the consent calendar and then to time certain. I think we have some requests to pull a couple of items, 978, 979. Any others? So, unless there are any other requests to pull consent items, let's vote on the balance of the consent calendar, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
Mayor, can I just, because I think you and I both have 979, can I get a sense of whether we're looking for a full-blown council presentation or a light one, and who pulled it?
Mr. Walsh pulled it, so I don't know what he's seeking, but I wouldn't assume we need a long presentation. Okay, let's move to number 975, please.
Accept the action plan for an age-friendly Portland.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to begin this morning by calling forward our honored guests, Dr. Margaret Neal, the director of Portland State University's Institute on Aging, Leslie Foran, the executive director of Elders in Action, and Deborah Stein, the principal planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Welcome, all. As the City Council liaison to Elders in Action, I'm honored this morning to introduce our new action plan for an age-friendly Portland, a plan which will help Portland become better prepared as our population ages. With the first retirements of the baby boomers upon us, Portland is preparing for the changing needs of our older adults. In 2006, Portland was the only city in America to stand up as leaders for age-friendly communities and to join the World Health Organization's Global Age-Friendly Cities Project. As a member of the project, Portland made a commitment to ensure that we have a plan of action in place to respond to the unique needs of our older adults, and our own Portland plan reflects that promise. I'd like to thank this morning the Age-Friendly Portland Advisory Council for developing this action plan for an age-friendly Portland. The Advisory Council was comprised of public and private community leaders with outstanding leadership from the Portland State University Institute on Aging. Now it is my honor to turn it over to PSU's Dr. Margaret Neal to walk us through the action plan. Margaret, welcome.
Great. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to begin by thanking you, Commissioner Fish, for your support of this work over the last few years, dedicating staff time as well. And to thank George Hawker, George, stand up. Thank you for his support on our advisory council. Both you and Commissioner Saltzman for your work with the Multnomah County Vital Aging Task Force a few years ago, and Commissioner Fritz for her initial support of our age-friendly cities work back in 2006-2007. So the first question is, why should we plan for an aging population? And the answer is complex and simple at the same time. It's numbers. It's economics. The world is aging. We have, in 2050, we will have more people age 60, over age 60, than we have people under the age of 14. And we are aging here in the Portland region. Between 2010 and 2030, the population overall is going to grow by 35%. The population 65 plus is projected to grow by 106%. It's time to plan. And then as this photograph shows, we're all aging. We start young and we get old, if we're lucky enough. As Commissioner Fish said, Portland is a leader in the International Age-Friendly Cities Project. At the Institute on Aging, we began addressing these issues many years ago with a report on livable communities. But then in 2006, we had the opportunity to join with the World Health Organization in this global movement to begin establishing age-friendly cities. We were, as the commissioner said, we were one of 33 cities in 22 countries around the globe, the only city in the U.S. to participate in this project. The different countries involved represented both emerging economies as well as developed economies, and we were all after the same goal, which is to figure out what are the features of a city that makes it age-friendly, what are the barriers, what gets in the way of making a city friendly for people who are older as well as people who are younger, and what suggestions did people have for change. In 2010, we submitted an application to the World Health Organization's Global Network of Age-Friendly Cities, and we were accepted. We were one of the first 9 members. The only other city in the U.S. to become a pioneer member of that network was New York City. And in 2011, the photo that's up here is the award of the certificate, which I believe may still be hanging in Commissioner Fritz's office, of membership in the Global Network of Age-Friendly Cities.
We'll have to rotate that.
So just thinking about this issue of what makes a community age-friendly, first of all, when we're developing a plan to create a more age-friendly community, we want to think about building on strengths, not just needs. So focusing on the opportunities that are associated with an aging population, the contributions of older adults, as well as their needs. So I've used that phrase, age-friendly communities, many times. Mm-hmm. What that means is communities that are enabling rather than disabling to people, that are inclusive rather than exclusive, that strive to be equitable, and that really focus on the life course from birth through death and on intergenerational connections, intergenerational interdependence. So a city that's age-friendly is one that's friendly for all ages and not just elder-friendly. The photograph here is a picture that was taken at Bridge Meadows, which is an intergenerational living arrangement where older adults serve as mentors to foster families. And it's award-winning. It's won a number of awards throughout the U.S. So our Age-Friendly City Action Plan, which was developed with an advisory council, this is certainly not just a Portland State effort, and I'd like to ask the members of the PSU Advisory Council on Age-Friendly Portland to stand up, please.
Give them a round of applause for their service.
As well as each of the other two speakers here. The plan has a focus on not just the built environment, but also the social environment. And there are 8 domains that were stipulated by the World Health Organization that should be attended to in any sort of action plan for creating an age-friendly city. So in terms of the built environment, that includes outdoor spaces and buildings, but also transportation and housing. And then the social environment focuses on community support and health services and communication and information and civic participation and employment. Respect and social inclusion, as well as social participation. What we have done in our action plan is actually pull apart 2 of those petals and created separate domains because we felt that they were so important that they needed separate action items to go with them. So community support and health services are pulled apart, and they each have their own domain. And civic participation and employment are also pulled apart and have their own domain. Because of time constraints, I don't have time to go through the whole action plan with you, but let me just say a couple of sort of guiding principles. One, older people need to be involved throughout the implementation of the plan as they have been involved in the development of the plan. It's a focus on life course, so it's making a community that's friendly for people of all ages and abilities. We're not requesting city funding per se, although we are requesting city staff and commitment on the part of the commissioners and the bureaus. Not all of the actions that are listed in the plan are new. They build on existing work that's already being done, and some are new. And a number of partnerships are involved, both public, to public, so Multnomah County interfacing with the city of Portland, our agencies within the city interfacing with one another, as well as public-private partnerships. So just in terms of housing, an example, our action item 1.3 is to encourage innovative approaches to housing older adults. I've already mentioned Bridge Meadows as one such example. Another is the Eastside Village PDX, which is involves a cooperative type of housing. We have a number of things that we're doing in Portland, and we can do more as we need to, thinking about our aging population, because costs of housing older adults are growing rapidly. Communication and information is another area that I'd like to highlight. Action item 8.1 stipulates that we should maintain clearinghouses for aging-related information. One of the things that we heard loud and clear from older adults in our data gathering effort is that we can't just go digital with information. There are too many older adults who don't have access to computers in their homes. Even they can get it at the library, but still they may not have the training. It's very important to maintain our existing clearinghouses. The Multnomah County Helpline was praised widely, as well as bulletin boards like this photograph here, maintaining those. Second action item is to improve online resources and create standards for age-friendly media. One of the things that a sub-item underneath here is to ask that all the Bureau's websites become age-friendly and follow standards that would make them legible to older adults.
Margaret, if I could just jump in here for a sec. A good example of this is recently the Water Bureau sat down with Elders in Action and reviewed some brochures that we hand out. And we asked for some feedback, and the feedback we got was really very helpful. And among other things, we were told the fonts were too small, so it was not readable. The information was too cluttered. And the one that really stood out for me was in one of our brochures, there were 12 different phone numbers listed that you could call if you had a problem. And they said that, you know, as you get older, it's better to have a single point of contact, and don't confuse people by putting 12 numbers in a brochure. And I have to say that a lot of the feedback we got was unexpected. It wasn't on our radar, which is precisely why we need to engage folks who are experts in communication to make sure that we're actually thoughtfully communicating to an important part of our community.
Thank you for that excellent example. Action item 8.4 talks about launching an age-friendly educational campaign, and this campaign would be very broad reaching. It would educate people about what age friendly is. It would educate people about the role of older adults, how what kinds of contributions that they currently make, what they could do. In our society, we don't actually have roles for older adults. At age 65, we're oriented toward retirement, and there are many things. These older adults are wasted resources right now. We need to figure out ways to benefit from their knowledge, their skills, their experience, develop social roles for older adults. We don't have the luxury anymore of wasting resources, whether they be human or financial. Connected with the age-friendly campaign is this idea, and reducing ageism is focused on employment and the economy. So our action item 6.1 is to improve access to employment opportunities and reduce ageism. This photograph was taken at New Seasons, which has a policy of hiring older adults. So what comes next? Well, first of all, we have individual responsibility to remain active, to be engaged in our communities, to work intergenerationally. That's what I'm trying to show here in this photograph. What our members of the Advisory Council will do is hold meetings with the potential partners who are listed after each action step, to talk with them about the action steps that we've proposed, identify any changes that need to be made, identify other partners who are not listed but should be, then begin to set priorities for action, establish ways to know whether we've made progress or not, and then we'll prepare an implementation guide with the Advisory Council. So I'd like to turn over my the microphone now to Deborah Stein from City of Portland.
Good morning. I'm really pleased to be here with my partners today. This has been a great partnership, and it's one that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability would love to remain very committed to. This action plan, I think, builds beautifully on the assessment work done not only by Portland State and our community partners, but the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And what is really impressive to me is how congruent this plan is with the healthy connected neighborhood, healthy connected community concept that we brought forward in the Portland plan and what is now being embodied in the comprehensive plan update. It's really clear to me that what we hear older adults say that they want in an age-friendly city is exactly the same set of ingredients that we hear from community members of all ages of what really would be a healthy, connected city. That's sort of the goal that we're trying to carry forward in the comprehensive plan. So that congruence really tightens that relationship and that partnership and keeps us committed in the work. This is a dynamic plan. It's going to continue to evolve. And I just came back from a national convening of AARP and city planners from across the country to talk about age-friendly cities. So I learned a lot from that gathering that I'd like to bring to this plan. But I also was really proud to share Portland's work to our to other cities in the country who've been working on age-friendly planning. And two of the things that really stood out that I was proud to share was one was the partnership and the amazing partner we have in Portland State University, not just with the Institute on Aging, but also with the Urban Planning Program, because that work, the assessment work, and now the next steps of implementation are really strong partners that we have, in addition, of course, to our advocacy and educational organizations throughout Portland. So that was really a standout nationally. And the other is that we do have this amazing point of time. Because we're updating our comprehensive plan right now, we have an opportunity to take these concepts and these actions and really embed them in a long-lasting, enduring plan with teeth. We have this great opportunity to look at our built environment and say, what are the ingredients we need to build into that and keep them enduring to make sure that our city is and continues to be age-friendly. So exciting opportunities ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deb.
Good morning, Mayor and City Commissioners. My name is Leslie Foran, and I'm the Executive Director of Elders in Action. I also want to thank Commissioner Fish for being our liaison and to our public advocate, George Hawker, for his outstanding leadership and push forward on the action plan. We serve as the federally mandated advisory council to the City of Portland and Multnomah County. Our goal as a partner is to help ensure that city services are age-friendly to our elder population and that city staff, its bureaus, and partner agencies are prepared to serve this growing aging demographic. We have been honored to work with the Institute on Aging Age-Friendly Cities Project since its inception in 2006. We have been encouraged by the City of Portland on its embracing of the vision and goals of becoming an age-friendly city. And we have also been proud that the Advisory Council and community members have been incorporated to bring forward the age-friendly equity lens into the Portland plan. I'm pleased to recognize several of Elders in Action volunteers, advocates, board members, and community partners who work diligently to help educate our elected officials, city planners, and the general public on the needs of this growing demographic. If they can please stand now to be recognized.
Bill?
This action plan is intended as an advocacy tool. It pulls together a set of strategies intended to help council, its bureaus, Multnomah County, Metro, local private and nonprofit organizations move our city and region forward to help develop and implement, nurture physical, social, and service environments that are friendly to all people. As an advisory council, we have a great advantage as we have established a strong private and public partnership, which is critical to moving this plan forward. We are poised for success with the outstanding leadership of Dr. Margaret Neal, the Institute on Aging, and the support of City Council. Elders in Action advocates and volunteers and staff are ready. We are here to offer our expertise and knowledge to help ensure the action plan moves forward. We look forward to assisting and advocating to help build robust partnerships between the City of Portland and Multnomah County on funding for services and legislative priorities on issues that affect our population. I thank you again for the opportunity to present this morning. As a member of the Advisory Council and as the Executive Director of Elders in Action, I look forward to our continued partnership with the Mayor and the entire Council to help ensuring we all have an opportunity to age with dignity in the city we call home.
Thank you very much, Mayor. That concludes the presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for this great panel?
I had one question, please. Maybe any of you can comment on this, but I sense, you know, we've often talked about having sort of a clearinghouse where older adults can go sort of to connect with opportunities, whether they're employment or volunteer. Do we have anything like that? Or Deborah, since you just came back from the conference, are there other cities that might be good role models on that?
Leslie probably can answer.
Absolutely. A portal, it would definitely be Elders in Action. And we, you know, part of our work is to engage and empower older adults. So if they're looking for employment, we certainly can help route them to our community partners as well as volunteer opportunities. So certainly feel free to direct people. We have a variety of community partners that are providing services. Also, Multnomah County Aging and Disability Services has their Aging and Disability Resource Center that can certainly help people get to the services they need.
And that includes connecting to volunteer opportunities?
Absolutely.
As well.
Yep. Services, employment, volunteer. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
Great. Thank you very much. Other questions, comments? Thank you all. Thanks.
Nice job.
Do we have others that are signed up to testify on this?
Yes, we have three people signed up. Please come on up. Mark J. Hoffhines, Peter Grattacelli, and Charles Johnson.
This is on the
Aging
Age-Friendly Cities Plan.
Let the other gentleman come before me.
Good morning.
Good morning. Should I begin? I haven't done this before. How
just
long?
Just give us
I
your
have?
Name for the record, and then you have 3 minutes.
Oh, thank you. My name is Peter Grattacelli. I'm from Portland. And, I'd like to speak in support of this plan. I especially like the way that it's designed to draw from each according to their ability as well as to give to each according to their needs. It's an empowering thing. The idea is to draw from the ability of the elders and, as you were just speaking of, the volunteer opportunities are an important way to empower them, and they had the Disability Resource Center and that other center. And so I'd like to speak in support of that. And I know it could work elsewhere too. It's a good model. And volunteer opportunities to build one's own shelter, to provide medicine, food. This too, after all, it's been shown to be a good model. For instance, there's a town in southern Spain that I'm not sure if you guys are aware of. It's called Marinaleda, and it's a town in southern Spain which established its own food cooperative on land given to it by the regional government in the 90s after they occupied that land, that like the landless farmers occupied these disused aristocratic estates for a number of years after the end of the dictatorship in the 70s. And the way that town operates now, they've got zero unemployment in a region where, in Andalusia, Spain now, the unemployment's at 37%. And they got zero unemployment in this town because everybody can work for the food cooperative. And it's a town of 3,000 people, too. The biggest example of a communal-run success that exists, And, the way this works is that everybody in the town is allowed to contribute according to their ability to their very survival. By working in the food cooperative and the food processing industries that they've developed on that land as well recently, over the years as it expanded. It started in the 90s, and today they have food processing as well. And it provides a pretty decent income for everybody there. I think it's about $1,600 a month per person who works in that food cooperative. It's not very much. It's still kind of meager wages. It's barely surviving, really. But that's because they're kind of by themselves right now. If a city like Portland was to get on board with something like that with them, you know, you could start it with the elders. Maybe the elders want to do some gardening. You know, you got some vacant city lots that aren't otherwise occupied. Perhaps they would like to garden there, build some shelters. Perhaps the homeless, too, might like to build some, straw bale alternative structures. They're pretty cheap, just labor-intensive. Perhaps they would like to garden there, too. We'll speak more of this anyway. I like the plan. Way to go.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Hey.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, morning. Mark D'Alfine, Jr., founder of YourCare. I love this picture that they got on here. This is talk to old people. They know cool stuff. I agree, most definitely. But also, the only thing I think is really missing from this plan is a homeless clause. You know, we've been dealing with homelessness for how long? Years. Okay, but I mean, it's a great plan. I mean, it's a beautiful thing that they're actually doing this, and I support you guys greatly. What I think we need to start implementing more often is when we do these types of plans and implementations of these things, we need to think also of the homeless that are in the same age groups. Because, you know, they're actually going to be involved in this. Because, I mean, with the jobs things, great. That's cool. If they offer the jobs things for the older people. But also giving them the opportunity to get in there as well. If we added a homeless clause and kind of incorporated them more into it, we would actually make a precedent as a city to actually show that we are actually working as a whole instead of against one another. You know, and so that, and I think that would be a good thing to start keeping in mind as we do these plans as well. And again, thank you guys for making that beautiful presentation.
Thanks very much. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor Charles Johnson. We generally have very good citizen and professional panels, so I know sometimes we get a nice glossy presentation, even though there's actually been in-depth work in the facts. But I think that we should have more honesty in our presentations. And the minute somebody gets up to talk about the elderly or even the citizens of any age in the city, we'd want to maybe consider whether we want to hear some PR firm expressions. Or when we talk about the elderly, do we want to hear some specific phrases like less suicide, less loneliness, less isolation, better medical care? Those particular phrases were not part of the presentation, and I think that that's your job as city councilors to actually help some of the meat get out there, even though we know that these are hardworking people who have done good, hard work. We need to look at the specifics. My personal feeling on this is a little bit influenced by the number of hours I've recently spent on the 8th floor of Providence Hospital and at Portland Rehabilitation at 12441 with somebody who was born in 1937. So I commend everybody, especially the elderly people, who stepped forward as part of this program. Elders in Action is great, but we always want to make sure that we're being constructively critical more than we're patting each other on the back. And I do want to echo Mr. Hoffhein's comment about elderly homeless, and in particular, situations where they are victimized. We didn't hear anything about reducing elder victimization. And one place we might find that is in some of the SROs and places like the Westwind Hotels, where people, sometimes 80, 90% of their income goes to provide them with bed bugs and communal showers, and they need to be moved into better situations, or that whole operation needs to be reconsidered. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Others?
That's all who signed up.
Mayor, one comment before
Please.
We go to a vote. The principal commitment that we're asking of council today, in addition to supporting the resolution and adopting the plan, is that each of us as leaders, that is the mayor and each of the commissioners, and through our bureaus, agree to engage this plan and its sponsors to explore ways that each of us can make progress towards an age-friendly city. And what we have learned in this exercise is that every one of us, in our individual leadership capacity and through our bureaus, can contribute something. And they are asking for a commitment that we will continue those discussions and begin to look to opportunities that we can jointly work on. And that's a very important part of this resolution.
Thank you. Other comments before we vote? Okay, roll call on the resolution, please.
Novick?
Well, I'd like to say that I appreciate the fact that the plan calls out the importance of good transportation infrastructure, in particular active transportation and access to transit, which means better network of sidewalks, signals, crosswalks, et cetera, which are critical to everybody, young and old. But I think that it's especially important that we consider the impact of having or not having those amenities for the senior population. And also, I mean, tomorrow is the Great Oregon Shakeout, and we want to remind seniors and people who are neighbors and relatives of seniors to make sure that seniors, along with everybody else, has a plan for when disaster comes. So thank you very much for your work, and I'm proud to vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to the leaders of this project at Portland State, at Elders in Action, community members who have stepped up. There's a lot of partners beyond those who were presenting today, and I appreciate that. When I was given the huge honor of being put in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement in 2009, I looked at the assignment. Then I noticed that Commissioner Fish was assigned to be the liaison to Elders in Action. And I questioned that because it's actually funded through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and Commissioner Fish made it quite clear that he was going to continue to be the liaison to Elders in Action. Even at that tender stage of beginning politician, I realized that two votes towards anything to support Elders in Action is definitely a good step in the right direction. So I commend you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership on this over many years. It was my honor to adopt the Age Friendly Cities Resolution in 2010. I might lend it to you occasionally. I commit to my office having a delegate to your ongoing work, and also Parks in particular will be a very strong partner in this work. I'm going to put a marker down right now, and that I'm going to be asking the council in the 2014-15 budget to be adding general fund resources to return the senior recreation programs to ongoing funding in the parks budget. We were able to save it with one-time money this year, and it's clearly something that needs to happen. It needs to be a partnership between Multnomah County and various other community partners, and that will be an early ask in my long list of requests, because as we start to climb out of the recession, we need to prioritize the things that we realize we just can't do without. And this services for seniors is one of them. We sometimes think that elders need help, but elders also give help. Commissioner Fish and I were honored to be at the Hollywood Senior Center 40-year anniversary a couple of days ago. And as I was leaving, a couple of folks came running after me, as people often do when we're at community events. And one of them was talking about the trails in Forest Park and how seniors are concerned about being run over by cyclists. And so that was interesting. The other simply wanted to say to express his support for people experiencing homelessness, and that sometimes people need a hand up. And it was very gracious to hear that from the seniors, who have weathered a lot in our community over the course of the last decades. So thank you so much for all of this work, and we will look forward to continuing to work with you. Aye.
Fish.
I want to begin by again thanking Margaret, Leslie, and Deborah for their great work. This is a superb action plan, and because of it, we have an opportunity here in Portland and Multnomah County to become a leader, not just locally, but a national and global leader in planning and developing a city that is accessible for people of all ages and abilities. And here's the key. When we do that, we all benefit. That's the beauty of this action plan. And you've given us the first concrete steps to take going forward. And I think it's only appropriate at a time like this to acknowledge all the people who've worked so tirelessly to bring this forward. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to just read the names of all the members of the Advisory Council, because they have all made a contribution. Scott Robinson, Jay Bloom, George Hocker from my office, Amy Daly, Doug Adams, Deborah Stein, Bandana Shrestha, Margaret Neal, Pamela Huff, Leslie Foran, Alan Del Torre, Loretta Slaughter, David Hansen, John Mullen, Julie Wilkie, and Mary Hanlon. We could not be more grateful for all the time that they have spent on this enterprise. You know, I had a slightly different experience at the 40th anniversary of the Hollywood Senior Center, but that's because I followed Amanda. She somehow got earlier on the calendar, on the schedule. I was like speaker number 50. And when I was finished, someone did approach us, except this person blasted me for a couple of my votes. And I was reminded, as this person was unloading on me for a couple of things I've done, that this goes under the headline of communication that you've talked about. This person may not have access to the internet. And the gentleman who was talking to us was experiencing poverty. So how wonderful it was that we were actually physically present so that he could take an elected official to task for something that he disagreed with. And in the course of the conversation, we actually found some things that we agreed on. And so I think we left with the hope that we could build on that relationship. But it was very important for him to have access to us, to those of us in leadership. You know, one of the proudest things I think this council has done the last few years is invest in a playground in North Portland called Harper's Playground. And it was presented to us as an opportunity to work with a family that wanted a playground that didn't have any barriers for one of their children. But if you go to Harper's Playground on the weekend, what you'll see is children of all abilities and adults playing together. So while the vision was to help Harper, who was otherwise prevented from accessing public spaces, the reality and the promise is that we as a community use that playground, old and young, intergenerational, children of all abilities. And that's our greatest strength, when there are no barriers and we can all work together and experience the greatness of this city together. So I could not be prouder of your work. I also make a commitment through my bureaus to continue to make progress. And I've heard from many of your supporters that it is vitally important that we continue to provide those discount programs for low-income seniors who otherwise would not be able to afford their water and sewer bills. And we make sure we communicate clearly to them about what those opportunities are. Thanks to everyone for a really splendid job. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank the Age-Friendly Portland Advisory Council and Commissioner Fish for all your good work here. This is really a great plan, a great action plan. I really appreciate how well laid out it is and how thoughtful it is. I think that, and I will commit to reviewing my bureau's websites and brochures and other ways to make sure that we are following the path of the Water Bureau's efforts to make sure we're larger fonts, less phone numbers, things like that. But I do want to say that, you know, I think a lot about being an age-friendly city is all about trying to combat isolation. I think that's a natural tendency that occurs as we all age. You know, I see it in my own self, too. And I think there's a natural tendency to become more isolated, but also because society, I think, as Margaret said, you know, tends to try to push you out the door at 65. That's why I hope, you know, that Elders in Action can really help connect people that really do want to get involved, because it's not easy. And I think that to the extent we can make it easier for people, whether they need employment or volunteer activities, we're all going to be better off, and we're going to end what I think is something that's so important to end, and that is the feelings of isolation that go with aging. So, great report. Please to support it. Aye.
Hales.
I like the substance of this report very much. But I also like the way it was put together, that we have this combination of academia and advocacy and city staff working together. Because you look at the collection of organizations, the three here represented, but also others, you know, and that's really a great partnership. And I like that very much. And I think all of us are, you know, as we listen to you and thinking about this point that Commissioner Fish made about how does each of our bureaus implement and work with you to make this plan into specific actions. I think each of us has got a list in our head now of, okay, we can do this, we can do that, and that's, of course, exactly what you were trying to provoke, and I appreciate that worked. Let me ruminate about one of those, and in fact, it's so great that Deb's involved. You know, how we build the city is not a one-year decision. You know, it lasts for a very long time, and when you think about the planning issues, which you do all the time, Deborah, about how do we make this a city where it's possible to age in your neighborhood? We have a lot of work to do. My parents were living independently until my mom was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and then they needed to move into a continuing care community. And their choices at that time, this was 20 years ago, were mostly suburban. The standard continuing care community was a suburban low-rise model. And there are a few urban models now, a few here in Portland and elsewhere. But if you look at the size of the aging population and the number of people who would like to remain in a city neighborhood and age there in their own network rather than have to uproot, as my parents did, and move to a completely different place, which was also occupied solely by old people. So that, to me, when you think about the planning agenda, just one piece of this work, what a huge challenge we have, but also an opportunity for Portland to be a model of how to meet this challenge and help improve a whole lot of people's lives in ways that will last a long time. So very important work. Thank you, and look forward to the next chapter. Aye. Good work. Okay, the next item is 976.
Salmon Safe Certification Award.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. Wait for folks to change. This item is celebrating an important achievement at Portland Parks and Recreation. In 2004, the Portland Parks system became the first salmon-safe certified system in the nation, and the Bureau was recertified in 2012. It's a very cost-effective certification. It's good for 5 years with a possible extension of 2 years. And the, this presentation is to explain and celebrate that work and to that has put in place system-wide practices that promote a healthy environment. Over the past 9 years, Parks has worked to incorporate the protection and restoration of fish habitat and water quality in how we approach the park system, with a strong partnership with the Bureau of Environmental Services and other bureaus also. These actions help the city address the issue of salmon recovery on a citywide scale by working with other entities to create an integrated and coordinated response. And I have to mention that it was an amazing success with our Parque Diem partnership with the Portland Parks Foundation last weekend. We had 1,400 volunteers, and many of the actions that they were taking were also salmon-friendly in terms of cleaning up with person power rather than with pesticides and machines and such. So that was a resounding success. Through our partnership with BES, with the Bureau of Environmental Services in Westmoreland Park and Eastmoreland Golf Course, the park's users can now see salmon and steelhead swimming in Crystal Springs Creek. Once the restoration work is completed, we anticipate the fish swimming all the way up to Reed College, and Reed has been a great private partner in our joint efforts. These particular projects illustrate how our collective and individual efforts contribute to salmon habitat restoration throughout the city's watersheds. In addition, is that our habitat restoration work provides long-term stormwater management, which is another positive for the river and for Portland residents. Dan Kent, the executive director and co-founder of Salmon Safe, will speak to us now about the certification program. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Fritz, and it's a real pleasure to be here this morning. Again, I'm Dan Kent, Executive Director of Salmon Safe. We're a Portland-based environmental certification nonprofit founded by a leading river and native fish conservation organization, Pacific Rivers Council. And our focus is really lower watersheds, inspiring habitat protection, water quality protection, as much as possible promoting ecological function across agricultural landscapes and urban landscapes. And really what we're celebrating today is the culmination of more than a decade of inspired leadership by Portland Parks, really working to make this place more fish friendly. And it's been an extraordinary path for us at Salmon Safe, working in tandem with Portland Parks across those years. But it's also a story that's bigger than simply the city of Portland. Those standards we developed with Portland Parks and the practices that Portland Parks has implemented over the last decade have now gone far beyond the city of Portland. Private companies, leading environmental innovators like Nike, for example, and REI have adopted those same standards and are applying them at corporate campuses. Universities like University of Washington, for example, is applying those same standards that were co-developed with Portland Parks. Lewis and